Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And welcome to the Investor Coaching Show. I am Paul Winkler. We talk about money and investing, financial planning, retirement planning, just about anything in preparing for those days when you feel like goofing off instead of going into work. And for some of you, you may not do that. I don't know. Leviticus, I know that you want to do what you do forever.
Yes, I do.
I know you
do. I love it. I love what I do.
Until you're like going, what's my name?
Yes.
What am I doing here?
Like this morning, I'm like, oh, I got to go back to work.
Oh, you mean okay. It was as recent as this morning
yes.
You thought about retirement. Okay.
Yes.
All right. That's all right. I get that. I get that sort of, but you know, for me, it's like, oh, what else can I do for living? Okay. Oh,
but you love what you do. I mean, you do a lot of things.
Well, I do a lot of stuff, you know, it's just eclectic. That's the fun part of it. So with Trevecca, they have a personal finance and they teach and bring me in for once in a while to teach on the investing side of things. One of the questions I'm going to start off was, at what age did you start investing in? Now, I think this is an important question because a lot of times people don't start investing really seriously until they're often in their 50s. And it's typically because there is something always more pressing. In your 20s, it's more pressing that you have to find some way to buy a house or maybe, you know, get transportation. And therefore, there's not a lot of extra money for any of those things. So a lot of times people don't necessarily think about investing for the future at that particular point. And part of it just comes down to that the future is so far off. And we can't imagine ourselves as an older person. I mean, just really the research shows that we can't imagine ourselves as an older person because we look at ourselves in a mirror and think, I'm going to be this young forever. And, it's only when we actually get artificially aged in a computer, one study showed, that we actually take it seriously and go, oh my goodness. Or, you know, when we look at in the mirror for real and start to realize that we're going to be older and we are older, that we actually start to recognize that, yeah, we're going to be that older person in the mirror and we ought to start preparing for it. So that was the first question was, at what age did you start investing? And for me, it was in my mid-20s. And it was really as a result for me when I read a book called The Richest Man in Babylon, and they were talking about how part of all you earn should be yours to keep. And I remember reading that and going, okay, that makes sense because I pay my bills and I pay for this and I pay for that, pay for this thing, but do I ever pay myself first? And you know, the answer was no, I really don't think about that, number one. Number two, it was also the wake-up call that I had a bunch of debt. And I thought, I am never going to get myself in this position again where I actually had a car that I bought and bought it on credit. My grandfather just begged me not to buy this thing on credit, and I did it anyway. So I had a car loan, and I just decided I was going to pay off the car loan, and I was going to put money aside at the same time. And that's where I started to invest. But I didn't really invest in stock market type investments when I first got my securities license, because I didn't really think I knew what I was doing, even though I had passed all these tests. Now, that is unlike the rest of the industry that will do it, even though Ira Work has just joined me. So, you know, Ira, you probably can relate to that.
Well, yeah, it was funny because the first time I started investing in the stock market, I was actually a teenager.
Okay. So before you even started
to work in the business.
Okay. All right.
And then I went, I had money in some savings bonds that I had gotten for birthdays, as a lot of people do that.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
And I took that out and I bought my first stock called Southern Company, a nice big utility which paid a dividend. And that thing grew very, very slowly, but it grew. And then I got into the business, working for a firm that sold penny stocks.
Yeah.
But not really.
So define penny stocks for people, because most people don't even know what that is.
So penny stocks are basically stocks that sell for less than a dollar. a dollar per share. Often cases, they sell for 2, 3, 4, 5 cents a share. So you can buy thousands of shares, and that's what's really attractive
about it. And you feel like, it is really for somebody that doesn't have a lot of money, because it seems like, ooh, if this just moves a couple of cents, I'm going to make a ton of money.
Well, that's actually how we used to sell it. You know, I would talk about...
I never sold this stuff, but that doesn't surprise me.
So the company that I went to work for, they didn't actually sell penny stocks. We sold stocks basically at a dollar.
Right.
And I would ask the potential clients the question, well, if you buy a stock for a dollar or you buy a stock for $50...
Didn't you sell it for a dollar, but it was really selling for 50 cents?
Not that I knew
All right.
Because the firm never really said what it was worth.
I mean, it was just something that reminds me of when we did bonds. We had bonds, and we could sell them for whatever we wanted to.
Well,
and we had an inventory of bonds. We could sell them. And, you know, you think about it, folks. If you sold it for whatever you wanted to, you could pump up the price, which drove down the yield some, but that's how you made money. You know, so, yeah, it was really. And, you know, it was funny because I remember people coming in and they would say, hey, Paul, I want to buy some bonds. And I was like, yeah, all right, cool. Uh-huh. And, you know, I didn't really think about what I was doing. It was other than I had to meet a sales quota.
Right.
Which is sad. But
well,
anyway.
I mean, and that's what we had to do, too, because we had a manager that would say, well, the producers, the people who sold a lot of stuff.
Yeah, right.
Are rewarded by the non-producers. Because even the people that sell a little bit.
They were rewarded by the non-producers. Right. What, they clapped for them?
No. You know, when you got like the trips to go on, like trips because you met certain quotas.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The reward trips.
Yes.
Yeah, even the people who sell a little bit. They're still making money for the firm.
Sure, so that pays for them to...
Right, so producers are rewarded at the expense of non-producers.
Okay, all right.
All right. But I would call up and say, hey, Paul, so let me ask you a question. You have two different stocks, one that trades for a dollar.
Okay.
One that trades for $50.
Yeah.
Which one do you think has a better chance of doubling?
Yeah, what has more potential? Sure, yeah, that's the dollar one. Yeah, man, all that has to do is go to $2.
Right.
If the other one goes up a dollar, that's nothing.
So for so 500, 100 share round lot at $50 is $5,000. Well, we can buy you 5,000 shares of that.
Oh, man, this is great, yeah.
If it just simply doubles, because from a dollar to $2, your 5,000 turns into 10,000.
Now, they don't necessarily tell you that it's hard to resell it if you have to, right?
Well, you know, that's the old Rodney Dangerfield joke. I don't know if you've never heard the joke.
No, I don't know I have.
So, Rodney Dangerfield, and tells a joke. My broker called me up today.
Okay.
My broker called me up last week and said, I got this great stock for you. Yeah. This is with the company. This is what they do. 50 cents a share.
Uh-huh.
He's like, oh, great, I'll take 100,000 shares.
Uh-huh.
A couple weeks later, I'm watching the stock. It went to 75 cents a share.
Nice.
My broker called me up and said, hey, Rodney, your stock is up. It's on this trend. I think you should buy some more. He's like, I'll take another 100,000 shares. So I buy another 100,000 shares. I'm watching the stock. It goes up to a dollar. I call my broker up and say, hey, sell. My broker says, to who?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're the only buyer.
So I came out of that environment. You know, the movie, I'm sure you saw it, Paul, Boiler Room.
I didn't.
You didn't?
No. I'm not a movie watcher. You know that. Come on, really?
I thought maybe because you're
you know that?
Well, you know, most of my friends who have been in this industry have watched all
that. Watched movies.
Not necessarily movies. Yeah, most of my friends do watch movies.
Yeah, some of them do.
Most of my friends in the industry.
You have friends with lives.
We've all watched the industry movies.
Yes.
Whether it was
Wall Street. Was it Wall Street?
Wall Street.
Yeah, that one I did watch. That was probably a questionable watch.
The Wolf of Wall Street?
No, I didn't watch that one.
Wall Street with,
no, it was the one that was doing the insider trading. Yeah, the guy, and he had Gordon Gekko, and
that was
the greatest speeches of all time was Gordon Gekko talking about greed.
Uh-huh.
Greed is good.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting because he actually had a point. It wasn't that greed is good, as in we think about it, you know, avarice, greed, you know, that type of thing. It was just the fact that when you are trying to desire more as a business owner, how do you actually get more as a business owner? You have to appeal to somebody else's needs. You have to be looking at what somebody else needs and what they want and fulfill that need for them. And that was the whole idea behind it. It was really true, because you think about it, if you're not supplying something that somebody needs, then you aren't worth very much financially. You know, so that was the big part about that.
Well, I had asked the manager that I had at the time, you know, his thoughts on that. And he said, well, depending upon the type of greed, the type of greed just to get it all for yourself, no, that's not good.
Yeah, that was, you know, it's kind of, he was defining greed in a different way,
right,
is where I looked at that.
But the way the manager said it to me was, you have to have a little bit of greed so that you can afford to stay in business, so you're here to service your clients next year.
Well, and the problem is how you got the money,
right,
in that side of the industry. And a lot of it is just, you have to meet certain quotas. And a lot of the people that I worked with in the investment industry and in the insurance side of things never asked questions. They didn't really question what they were doing. They were just doing what they were told.
Well,
you know, so it was like, this is what you need to sell. This is what you need to be doing. I had guys working around me, for example, in the late 80s, and they were saying, Paul, if you really want to take care of your clients, just make sure that you get international stocks for them, because in U.S. stocks don't do anything. Mm-hmm. And they were right, because the last two decades, U.S. stocks hadn't done anything. It just happened to be the worst advice ever, but it was just misguided advice.
Mm-hmm. Well, the company that I went to work for at the very beginning, as I said, this, you know, penny stock house, it was really, we were selling low price stocks, anywhere from 75 cents to $2. But we were called low price. The manager, my very first day there, I went in on a Friday. He called me up. This is back in the day when you took the test and you had to fill in the bubble.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, they had people two rows ahead of you, two rows behind you, and three seats in between you.
Yeah.
And the other person, you filled in the bubble.
Yeah.
And it was a Saturday afternoon, a full day Saturday.
Yeah.
And we got the results on Wednesday. So,
yeah,
like for 5 days, you're sitting
there on pins and needles.
Like,
right, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I walked out of here knowing I passed. Sunday, I'm beginning to wonder if I
passed.
Did
I pass?
Monday, I'm pretty sure I'm not.
I'm an idiot.
And on Wednesday, he calls me up and says, did you even study for this test?
Oh, no, he did not. No,
and
that's
I'm
mean.
Like, why?
That's mean.
And there was like silence, you know. You know, that, what do they call that? That pregnant pause.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
right.
And he says, well, you passed.
I'm yeah, like, that's oh, funny. Right. That's
so now
funny.
He's like, so can you come up on Friday so we can do all the paperwork and this and that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, sure. He says, all right, meet me at 11:30. We'll go to lunch. So he takes me to lunch, walking him back into the office to do the paperwork. And he says, all right, now that you passed the test, we're going to show you and teach you how the business really works.
Mm-hmm.
Gave me all the material of what to study over the weekend to be able to hit the job running on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And the job was how dial does you, 300.
Yeah, I was going to say how the business really works. It's not what you just studied necessarily. It's
correct.
What you've got to do to sell.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you're going to dial 300 phone numbers a day.
Yeah.
You're going to hope to contact 50 people.
Yeah.
You're going to hope to get 10 prospects, and you're going to send them a brochure with your business card.
And you're going to get three meetings, and then one person will buy.
Oh, no.
Oh, is 10-1, 10-3-1? Because that's what I learned.
No. What you're going to do is you're going to get, you know, 10 prospects a day.
Right.
At the end of 2 weeks, you're going to have 100 prospects.
Uh-huh.
And then the following week, you're going to call them up to prepare them for the next week of a potential company that we're looking at.
Right.
Which we think will be a good investment.
Yeah.
This sounds like a miserable job.
Well...
You know what? When you just got out of college,
like that,
anything was good.
It was cold calling.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, you go back to that point in time, and jobs were very scarce. I mean, I had to, you know, as I've told before, I had to know somebody to get a job at Burger King. You know, so you know
that
you remember that story,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then trying to get a job. You know, I wanted to get a paper route, but all the paper routes were taken, and I got to be the sub for another guy, and that was just a huge blessing. But, you know, now what happens is you got a lot of different things that you can do. And a lot of people have a little bit of an interest in finance. A lot of it picked up through, like I was talking to one guy, we had the American Dream experience. And we got to talking about one of the guys that I've worked with for quite a while, been a client for quite a while. And he said, told the story of how he became a client of mine. He says, I literally would spend all this time studying the magazines. And he says, I just thought I was a genius. I really thought I was a genius. I thought I knew everything. You know, I'd read all and, you know, all the major financial magazines. I won't name names, but he read all the major financial magazines. And then he says, then I sat through one of your workshops and then I recognized that I didn't know anything. And, you know, the thing is that so often that's what happens. Somebody gets a real interest in it. They start reading magazines. They start reading books. They read a lot of things. And then they get into the industry and they do what they learned in the magazines. They don't recognize that it wasn't right because there's no academic backing behind what they were doing. So very, very normal.
Well, and that's part of the problem. And the reason why, you know, the Dalbar research shows that most investors actually underperform the returns that they could be getting.
Oh, by a lot, not just by just a little.
You know, and that's because they're following the recommendations of past performance and the industry, and they're not really taking any action on their own part. They're blindly trusting, and the advice that they're getting is very misleading.
And the idea being not that you just blindly trust the advisor, you take an active role, because if you understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, the level of confidence goes way up. And as you know, somebody said at the workshop, you know, I love it that you guys talk about relaxing. He said, because that's exactly where I am.
Well, what was really interesting is after the first two sessions on the very first day, one of my clients came up to me and said, Ira, thank you for not giving up on us. You know, you had invited us last year and we didn't come.
That's cool.
And thank you for inviting us again.
Yeah.
You know, we got so much out of those first two sessions. And then at the end of the first day, she came back up to me. And she said, I want to apologize for making a reservation last year and not coming to it because it was a big mistake. We learned so much.
That's so cool.
And again, thank you again for just keeping up with us.
Well, you weren't there. I actually interviewed several people, you know, afterward. And what they said routinely was, at first, I didn't think this was going to be anything. I thought it was just going to be, you know, I don't know what, you know, I'm not going to put their words in their mouth because I actually have recordings of it. And I'll use it because I think it's going to be great.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be, I'm going to make it part of a commercial.
Okay.
Yeah, it will be.
Cool.
But basically what I heard routinely was that this was way different than I thought it was going to be. So my burning question for you, I have no clue the answer to this question. When are we doing it again? What do you think?
We're waiting for confirmation. It'll probably be in the fall.
Oh, okay. Summer gets a little slow. Yeah, okay.
Summer gets a little slow. People are taking vacations.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, the whole thing is, I mean, it is really a lot to put together.
It is a lot. Yeah, it is.
And we want people to, you know, we want the participants to be as prepared as they can be.
If you have no clue what we're talking about here, let me just say something really quick because we're going to have to do a break. But we're talking about the American Dream Experience.
Well, yeah. Why don't we actually go to the break, if we have a minute, rather than, and let me really go into it a little bit deeper when we come back.
Okay, sure.
Hey guys, if you want specific advice for your unique situation, schedule a free 15-minute phone chat with one of our trusted advisors by going to paulwinkler.com/call. We don't sell any products, and our advisors don't make any commissions, so this isn't a sales call. We have a coaching process that helps you understand investing and relax about money. Don't put blind trust in anyone with your financial assets. We want to partner with you in the process so you know what you're doing and why. We manage assets on a fee-only basis, which means that when you do well, we do well, which aligns our interests with yours from the start. We also bring you into the financial planning process that gives you a clear plan so you can find the freedom to pursue your purpose. All our advisors are degreed planners too, with years of experience. So schedule a free 15-minute phone call with an advisor by going to paulwinkler.com/call.
Okay, so Ira, you were talking about, so we had the American Dream Experience, and it is a two-day workshop that we do, and it was fun getting people's feedback where they thought, I'm not going to like this, do I have to go to this, do I have to sit there, you know, and then they came back and go, whoa, this was totally different than I thought it would be.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the majority of the time, they go to a workshop, right, and not necessarily our clients, but I think just in general.
Yeah.
They go to a workshop and they're told certain things, but they're not given answers.
Mm-hmm.
And in this workshop that we do, and no different than any of the other standalone workshops that we do.
Right.
We're actually giving answers and not trying to sell a product.
Yeah. And the other thing that they liked about it in the interviews that I did was how interactive it was, is that they were able to actually engage and discover things for themselves. Because the reality of it is, if I tell you something, I've told you something. If you discover it yourself, it's a whole different deal. It's life-changing when we discover things. You ever notice that with your kids? And, you know, you go, you tell them something, and they're like, one ear out the other. But if you have them discover it for themselves and ask them questions, and that is really the key to getting people to do things that are better for themselves, to get them to see change in their lives. Because a lot of times we do have the answers, but the reality of it is we don't have confidence in ourselves.
Well, if you think about it, you know, when you were a kid and your parents would tell you something.
Right.
Well, I don't know why. Oh, my friend's parents let their kids do this. Or, my friends are allowed to do that. And your parents would say, well, I don't care what your friends are able to do.
Right.
And you don't really understand why your parents won't let you do some of the things that their friends are allowed to
right.
do. And then when you become a parent, you know, now you're raising your kids, you realize why your parents did certain things they did.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really appreciate what your parents are going through, what your parents are sacrificing, what your
wait
parents,
till you're a father.
Right. You know, what your parents
wait
really,
till you have kids of your own.
What your parents really want for you
yeah.
until you become a parent.
Right.
And then you can look back. And I remember, you know, going to my parents and asking for forgiveness for some of the rebellious things I did.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. I did because
that was so good of you.
I really understood what they went through with me.
Yeah,
I mean, and
sure.
I was by no way a bad kid.
Don't misunderstand that.
But I just thanked them for some of the boundaries that they gave me.
Yeah.
Because I know that it helped develop me into who I am, you know, in my work ethic, in the way I think about people, in the way that I give.
Right.
A lot of it is because of my parents. My desire to educate investors comes from my grandmother, who taught me how to save money.
Right.
You know, and how money makes money. I mean, she started me off when I got my very first paper out at the age of 12. You know, she's the one who said, okay, now that you're working for money, do you want to see how your money can make money?
Right.
And I would give her a dollar of whatever I got in tips every week. I would give her a dollar to put in the passbook. And that was at the time, you know, they had passbooks.
Oh, yeah.
And I would see the column of the date and the deposit and the interest that my money was making.
Right.
So it was very, very rewarding for me to see how money makes money. And I got that education as a young child.
Right.
And I always saved money.
Yeah. So have you experienced it yourself?
Right. You know, so I think for the participants and when I'm talking to clients about, you know, given 2 days, and sometimes I have to take out the calculator and say, okay, you're 60 years old. You can possibly live, let's say, another 20 years, 7,500 days or whatever it is, 7,200 days. The percentage of the 2 days that you're going to sacrifice, you know, is so tiny that this can help give you peace of mind for the next 20 or 25 or even 30 years.
Whatever year round, sure.
You know, and if you're in your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, you have that much more time ahead of you. So the fraction of time that you're spending and sacrificing for these 2 days, and oftentimes what we see is that the biggest life that goes on for the participant is not from what we're sharing from the very, very front of the room, but it is the interaction and the sharing.
What other people say,
other participants, because you get to see, hey, I'm no different. I'm not the only one with this concern. I'm not the only one with this issue.
Well, it's funny you say that because you said something from the front of the room, and I'm sitting there in the back, right? And you were talking about, you know, what purpose, you know, you got through the purpose exercise, uh-huh. which is really, really good. And at the very, very end, I'm sitting there going, wow, you know what? I came up with a different purpose statement than I had had in the several times. Because I've done that and I've taught it
uh-huh.
for years. And I just told myself, I'm going to actually go through it this time. And it was interesting because you actually had several phrases. You had probably about, 20 of them maybe up there on the mm-hmm. the screen.
Yep.
Possible purpose statements that you might have. And one of them hit me like a brick.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really good. It was, you want to know what it was?
Which one?
It was the one being useful to people.
Uh-huh.
And I thought about it. That I was like, oh my goodness, because I had... You know, to make a difference was one of mine. Connection was another one that I had before. Connecting with people is really big for me. And then making a difference in people's lives. But I was thinking, you know, the reality of it is I just want to be useful and help people. And it's not just in finance. It's just about everything. And it was just hit me that it was something that overarches everything. So, you know, and, you know, that may be yours. It may not be yours out there. But the reality of it is that there's so many different, the exercise is so good. And then what it does is it gives you possible things that you could, and the reason this is an important exercise, let me just explain. It's the reason it's important is because when I look at money is just a tool to express what you value. And so often we just run through life and we don't even really think about what's really important to us. And, you know, people will accumulate money and they'll accumulate money. And I had a situation where I was talking to somebody and the mother actually never really helped out her kids. Okay. Now, this was an interesting thing because the mother was very, very, very wealthy, never helped out her kids. And, you know, I'm getting into the story of this person's life. And come to find out, and I had a guy that this had happened to, the guy really didn't do a lot either for his kids. Well, come to find out that he had inherited all of his money, this guy, from his dad, who ran an incredibly successful business. And the reason he never really helped out people, charities, kids, his own kids, was because he was afraid that if he gave away too much, he wouldn't be able to earn it back because he was not the one that earned the money in the first place. Really what it got to.
Interesting.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And, you know, so often we can label somebody as going, well, you are just a miser. You're terrible and blah, blah, blah. But a lot of people live lives of just quiet desperation and scarcity because of where the money came from. And that is really where the education becomes important on how you invest. Because if I walk through when you're investing what you're doing, you're owning tens of thousands. If you're doing this in what we would deem to be the correct way, you're owning tens of thousands of companies all around the world. And it's the difference between you being a tree earning money in an orchard. You're one tree in an orchard. Now, if you're smart, what do when you're running the orchard, you'll take those apples off the tree, let's say, mm-hmm. and you will plant them not only in your own orchard, but you might plant them all around the world because the climate is going to be different in different areas of the world. And therefore, what happens when you do that, now you have trees, no matter what is going on in the world, you'll have trees everywhere, and some of them are going to be producing fruit. Mm-hmm. So the reality of it is you being a sole producer, that person was in scarcity because they were the only tree and they didn't really recognize that they should have been investing in such a way that they were literally having orchards all around the world as my metaphor for this. And the problem is they weren't doing that because their parents didn't invest that way. The parents didn't invest very well, but the parents didn't need to invest very well because they were actually incredible producers of more and more and more money, no matter if they lost it all. It's kind of like, you know, Warren Buffett goes and leaves his wife a bunch of stock, right?
Mm-hmm.
And puts it all in the S&P 500. And you go, hey, that's what you ought to do. No, if you're Warren Buffett, maybe you can get away with it because you can go 20-year periods with no returns.
Right.
But you have billions of dollars, your wife's never going to run out of money.
Right. When you're worth $180 billion,
yes, it doesn't matter.
Kept it in the bank earning 0.2%.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to the Investor Coaching Show. I'm Paul Winkler. He's Ira Work. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The opinions voiced and information provided in this material are for general informational purposes only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what investments are appropriate for you, please consult with a financial advisor. Paul Winkler, Inc. does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation.